Welcome back to Missing. I am Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
Feeling pretty good, Tim. Feeling pretty good. We had a late night interview last night because the clock just never stops over here at Crawl Space Media. And I can't wait to get to this interview. But Tim, you look refreshed. Looks like you got some sleep after that late night interview. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot for asking. Yeah, we did have a wonderful conversation with John Fariso, who has been on these airwaves previously, speaking about some missing persons cases. He volunteers his time for private investigations for the missing. Of course, that is the nonprofit that we're on the board of that was founded by Bruce Maitland. And you can find out more information about what they do at investigationsforthemissing.org. And John Fariso is a retired NYPD detective, and he was working in the missing persons unit for the NYPD for many years. And so PIs for the Missing is lucky to have him. And in this conversation, we are joined by missing person Janice LaPlante's daughter, Tracy, for this conversation about her mom, Janice LaPlante, and her disappearance. And also, you can check out Tracy on TikTok. It's at Trey Shea Official. There's a link in the show notes, but it's TRAESHAI.official on TikTok.
Show her some support over there. She's doing a great job mobilizing support by way of that social media platform and could really use all the help that is available. And this conversation is fascinating and powerful on so many levels. One, you mentioned private investigations for the missing and how John works with them, works within that organization. And I love, one, being on the board of this nonprofit and seeing the inner workings, and two, showing those inner workings to the listeners and showing how this is happening in real time, where someone like Tracy can reach out to the organization. She can get her mother's story on the podcast, which is great media coverage, but she's also right there with John. I mean, they're on the Zoom, but she's working right there in tandem with John as he's giving her advice on how to handle law enforcement in that area, next steps, how to be diplomatic, be patient, but he's also very compassionate. And he is more than willing to reach out on her behalf and just work with her on any level to get some answers for her mom. So I just really, really love the fact that we're able to do that, show the listeners that this does work when it comes together, and that's where you get answers. And if people support folks like Tracy in her attempts to find her mom, we'll have the GoFundMe link in the show notes, then answers can happen and she can move on and perhaps advocate for another missing person or another family member.
Absolutely. And Janice LaPlante went missing on July 25th, 2011 from Lincoln, Alabama. She was 49 years old at the time of her disappearance. She'd be 60 years old today, between 5'3 and 5'6 and about 110 to 115 pounds. And if you have any information, you can call the Lincoln Police Department at 205-763-7777.
And additionally, if anybody wants to submit a tip to Investigations for the Missing, you can go to investigationsforthemissing.org and you can email them PIFTMtips@gmail.com, or you can call 866-331-6660.
And follow us on social media at MissingCSM. Thanks a lot for listening.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the host of the Underworld podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the podcast, Tracy and John. How are you both doing this evening?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing very well.
We're doing fantastic. It is evening. Tim said thank you for joining us this evening. So we are stepping out of our usual comfort zone of mid-afternoon interviews and doing this evening one. So thank you very much for accommodating on that end. Before we get into the episode itself, John, you've been on the show before, and
yes.
And we've spoken, and you work with our nonprofit now, Private Investigations for the Missing. I feel like you need some sort of intro name, not a nickname so much, but like something like Officer John or something like that. Like, I feel like we need to work on it. So just before the next time, just shoot us an email with some suggestions.
All right, I will. My detectives that worked for me in the NYPD had an interesting name for me. It was funny, but I don't want to keep it going. So it can't be that one. I'll think of one.
Okay.
Well, thank you both for joining us here tonight. And we are going to be speaking about Tracy's mom, and that's Janice LaPlante. And Tracy, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I don't know. That's always a loaded question. I feel like, do people ask that question and like really want to know, or are they just being like, hey, are you okay? Like, you know what I mean? But no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Well, I do understand. I mean, a lot of these conversations we have are, you know, we're talking about, you know, important moments in people's lives and, tragic moments, as well. So, I guess in the context of your mom being missing, how are you?
I'm trying really hard to be strong throughout all of it, and I'm trying really hard to advocate for her and to bring some sort of justice for her, because it's just something that, you know, it just weighs on my heart every day. And I don't know, it makes me sad, but it also makes me feel like I have to turn that sadness into strength to be the voice for her, since she doesn't have a voice, or, you know, we may not, you know, we don't know.
I just have to commend you on the answer, the honest answer of how you are, because most people just do say, well, I'm okay. But there are so many like different levels to that answer. And there's so many like contexts that you can, I guess, apply that answer to. So just good on you for answering that honestly, because it's not easy. Like this, the shit we talk about here is not easy. So yeah, and I think that really needs to resonate with listeners, that these people in your position, yourself and other people in your position, are in pain and they need help. They need their voices to be heard, and they need to know that people know that they're not always okay. So
yeah.
So
sure.
Good on you for that. And before we get into the story of your mom, how did it come to be that you got connected with John?
I was on another podcast, the Fall Line podcast, and they gave me some information about different numbers to reach out to access some sort of help. And I think it came through that way. I don't remember quite well, but I think that's about how it came through, I think. And we started emailing each other back and forth and stuff like that. Just having, you know, I've been trying to keep in touch with him with whatever information I get or anything like that.
I believe Fall Line Podcast contacted Private Investigators for the Missing to do some work on this and have a private investigator assigned to it. That's what I believe, how they handled that situation.
Yeah, what he said.
And John, how long have you been working on the case?
This is going on about 2 months now.
And what exactly is the process? When somebody comes to you, when you're approached for something like this, we talk about it a lot when we are referencing Private Investigations for the Missing, that cases are submitted to us typically through email, and then we feature them on the show. But people are really interested in like the inner workings of the process when you first hear about somebody, and then what's your next step? So in this case, what was your next step? And then how do you vet out the ones that are going to be investigated, featured, etc.?
Well, this case came a little differently than most because it came from another podcast. So most of them don't come that way. So there was a lot of information from that podcast. So how I start is I go right to the podcast. What they'll do is they'll give me all the information. So they gave me all Tracy's information, all her missing mom's information, whatever information they have at the time, they'll give it to me. And I go right to the podcast because there's a wealth of information from that podcast. So I listen to the entire podcast. I take my notes and I begin from there. And that's my basis for the very beginning of my investigation, which is all online and phone calls at that point, because we're dealing with two different states. We're dealing with Mississippi and I'm in New York. So what I do is I first get information I can, and then I'll contact the person who reported it, which would be Tracy this time. So I wait, I do this on every case. I wait to call the person, which is usually a child or a sister or a brother who reports it. So when I called Tracy, I had a bunch of questions. And like I always do, I asked them for honesty, and I asked them that these questions are difficult. They're not easy. I have to ask difficult questions, and she understood. And we spoke well, and it was a very good interview. She gave me a lot of information that, as an investigator, you have to ask direct questions that maybe a podcast doesn't always do, but as an investigator, you will do. And every piece of information I get can take you into another part of the investigation. So there's a lot going on with other family members and other people to contact, but that's not always something we can do or can be done. But those questions always have to be asked of the person reporting it. And once all that information is obtained that you can obtain, you start making phone calls to other people. And there was a lot of, because of the circumstances of this case, it seems like it's still an active investigation. So I contacted the Lincoln County, Alabama investigators. They didn't get back to me. So I missed a big part of the interview process in that. And all I could do was make the attempt, and they didn't get back to me. But there was, Tracy could explain this, there was another aspect to this case that didn't give results, but it needs to be spoken about, which was the Doe Network had a companion case. And I looked that case up online, and a lot of times family members will ask me, this person looks like my deceased. They look like my deceased. The information is close. And a lot of times it's not, but this time it was. And DNA needed to be taken on that because that's how close the match looked. Anyone who looks at those two cases can see the match. Unfortunately, it wasn't a match, and maybe somebody else will get closure out of that. And I was able to network a lot with the Emmys. I believe it was Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And they had a Jane Doe in Knoxville, Tennessee, same age, same height, same race, right around the same time, and even down, I believe, to the hair color, but Tracy could explain it a little more. And they were very helpful, and I learned a lot from my future cases from dealing with the Knoxville medical examiners.
Tracy, this was a Jane Doe who looked a lot like your mom.
Yeah, I always randomly like just search my mama's name, just hoping something comes up or anything, you know, maybe there's an obituary somewhere or there's something. And there was a video that popped up on YouTube, and it was this woman that has like a true crime channel on YouTube. And she pulled up the Jane Doe information and compared it to my mom. And when I saw it, I just like my stomach, like, I mean, my heart fell into my stomach. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is her. Like, they drew like a rendering of this Jane Doe about approximately what she would look like. And like, this woman looked just like my mama. Like, it was crazy. And I was just like, I just knew it was her. And then, yeah, so we went through the whole process of extracting DNA from her. And I was able to donate my DNA to them, and they were able to compare it, and it came back that she was not my mom. And I was just, I was more shocked that they said she wasn't my mom than, you know, if they said she would have been my mom. So I don't know, maybe it's my mom has a twin or something. I don't know, but it was crazy. They look so much alike, so much alike.
In a situation like that, where you're providing your DNA and you're waiting for an answer, are you must be hoping that this is your mom, or is there like a pretty significant 50-50 split that it's not?
I think at this point, I was just hoping it was her, just so I would be able to give her some sort of peace, or, you know, be able to take the next step and finding some sort of justice for her, for whatever happened to her, or be an advocate for her still, you know, no matter what.
And you're doing a great job being an advocate for anyone left who doesn't know about your mom's disappearance. Can you fill us in on the circumstances?
Yeah, so one night they were she lives in this apartment complex, and they were all having a little get together where everybody was drinking and partying and everything like that. Well, she and another guy walked to the gas station. Well, they were sent to go to the gas station, and she did not return back. He came back without her and said that she stayed behind to talk to somebody. And he just left her, apparently, but they don't even know if she made it to the gas station. They don't know anything like that. And that was the last time she was seen. Supposedly, there she just vanished into thin air. So I don't know. And that guy died like soon after my mama went missing. So I don't even know if they even investigated him or anything like that.
Yeah, really, really frustrating, because this isn't a disappearance that we typically cover, which would take place in, you know, the mid-80s, late-80s, early-90s. This was something that happened in 2011. So I'm just curious if you were aware of any surveillance footage or, you know, security CCTV footage. Was there anything out there that showed who she stayed behind to talk to, or even her, like, en route?
No, I asked the investigator, and he just said that they never pulled it, or that it re-records over it in, like, 30 days. I don't remember. He said something about that they didn't have it. So I don't know. I just feel, like, frustrated with them, you know? I mean, I'm not trying to bash anybody, but I just feel frustrated because I feel like they didn't act enough as soon as this happened, you know?
Since 2011, the video surveillance has come a long way. 2011, I would consider a cold case. So there was, unfortunately, back then, it's much harder. They were probably still using VHS tapes to record. Who knows if it recorded? Probably was on 24 hours and that was it. And then it was taped over. That's how the systems were back then. So it's back then it is hard to obtain video surveillance. Sometimes some of the bigger establishments like a 7-Eleven or a high-end gas station will have better surveillance, but the smaller locations, it's very hard to obtain surveillance from back then.
And this man who was with your mom, you mentioned that you're not really sure if he was investigated too much. Did he ever give a statement that you're aware of or anything?
I don't know. I honestly don't know if they even had anything to do with him, because it seemed like when I brought his name up to the investigator, she was like, oh, he already died. So like, to me, that was as if they didn't ever investigate him, or they were just like, oh, well, I don't know. I don't know what they did with him, honestly. Like, I feel like there's so many gaps in my mom's story and like between what the investigators are saying and what I know and what everybody, you know, I just feel like there's a lot of holes, and like I've been trying so hard to fill these holes, and it's just, I feel like, I don't know, it's just frustrating.
Real quick, I don't know if you mentioned how old you were when your mom disappeared.
I think I was like 23 or 24.
Okay.
Yeah, I was older.
And what was the family dynamic at the time?
Oh God. Okay. So, my sister and I, we were taken away from my mom when we were 11, and put into foster care. And then she lost custody over us. And then my sister and I were adopted into a family when we were 14. And then it was a closed adoption, so we couldn't have anything to do with her or anybody else in the family or anything like that. And then, when we got older, we were able to get in contact with her again. And it was really rocky because, you know, I lived in Texas at the time with my ex-husband, and she lived in Alabama, and my ex-husband and I were going through a divorce, and she told me to come back there to stay with her. So I did, but I discovered that she was still using drugs and still living a really hard life, and I didn't feel safe there. So I left and went back to Texas. And then like 2 weeks later, I hear this, you know, this old man that she was with calls me and tells me, you know, that they haven't seen her and everything like that. It's really crazy.
Who is the old man that called you?
Her boyfriend. His name was Eugene, and he lived with her.
And as far as like suspects are concerned, was Eugene considered a person of interest? Has there been anybody?
They said no. I don't know. They just said it because he's just so old. I don't know.
You were using that as like he's literally an old man, not like her old man, like her boyfriend, but he was old.
Yeah, he was super old. Like I mean, he was like 80 something. I guess she would, I don't know. Like, do you want to say like he's her sugar daddy, but he's broke? So I don't know what you would call that. I don't know. Just her old boyfriend. I don't know. It was weird.
Okay. And was that the man that she was with when she went missing?
No. Well, yeah, she lived with him when she went missing, but the man that she walked to the store with was a different man.
Okay. And did Eugene give statements? Did he speak to authorities or investigators?
Yeah, he did. He did. He gave a statement because he was with her. He was there at the apartment, you know, and then they left and he was still there waiting for her to get back and she never returned. And so he was like in a wheelchair and very, very like elderly. I mean, he couldn't do anything for himself really. And she was like taking care of him and giving him his medicine and, you know, everything like that. And he didn't do too well after her. I think he had to go into a nursing home after she left, disappeared, whatever.
So he's the one that contacted you to let you know that no one had seen your mom. And how long after the day that she disappeared did he contact you?
It was about 2 weeks after she disappeared. It was about 2 weeks.
What was your next step when you heard that? And then how did you put together your advocacy in the meantime?
I called up to the police department and got in touch with the investigators, and they really didn't give me much of anything. Like, I mean, we've gone through about like 5 different investigators, I guess, and they just, I don't know, they just always kind of like blew me off and made me feel really defeated for a long time. I felt defeated until like I discovered TikTok and, you know, started trying to use some sort of a platform for my mom on TikTok and to get her voice out there. And, you know, I feel like I've been trying really hard to do that.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Thanks to our sponsors. And now we're back to the program.
Let me just step in really quick. This is before we move on. This is a classic example of what I spoke about at the other podcast. When you have a missing in one state, an investigator in that state, and a family member reporter in another state. And unfortunately, that's common. And unfortunately, information gets lost. I'm not saying lost where it can never be found, but it's just not translating across to the correct people. And the state barriers are common. And you know, you got sometimes even different police departments. This wasn't the case there, but when you have different states, someone has to travel to that state to actually meet the person. So information is somewhere, but it didn't get relayed. It seemed that. I don't know for sure, but this is a classic example. I've dealt with this over and over again.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. You had mentioned that when you met your mom after you were allowed to meet her, you know, post-adoption, you realized that she was still living a rough life. I think that's,
yes.
You said she was still living a rough life. Do you think that has anything to do with, I don't want to say a lack of energy put into her disappearance, but do you think that, yeah, I mean, you're nodding. So that probably has something to do with, like, again, any energy that is being put forth into trying to locate her.
Right. Yeah, I think so for sure. Unfortunately, I feel like that happens to a lot of people. It's really unfortunate that people's lives are valued on basically, you know, their choices and decisions, and they don't deserve, you know, to have things, or they don't deserve to be found, or they don't deserve. It's just sad. It makes me so upset.
Well, yeah, because people are looking at just the individual. They're looking at the individual who's missing, and all they see is this person who lived a rough life, but they don't see that there's daughters and sons and husbands and sisters. Like, there's family that are not doing that. You know, they're trying their hardest to find their mom, and that is painful. And if you're just going to marginalize them and not put energy into it, and I'm certainly not saying like law enforcement, I'm saying, you know, organizing vigils and doing things like that, you know, like you're doing a great job on social media, getting the word out there, getting the following and making sure that people put your face on her story, you know, so they can see the importance there. So, again, that's just super important. Have you generated anything from that? Any leads or anything that you've passed off?
No, not anything particularly. Just the one Jane Doe situation, you know, thinking that she may have been my mom, you know. But No, nothing really. I mean, there's a few like ideas that I've had, you know, things that maybe coulda, shoulda, woulda, may have happened, you know, and things like that. But there's nothing concrete or anything, you know, it's still just so much in the air, I guess.
And how has your experience been trying to share spread the word about your mom's disappearance on social media?
It's actually done really good. You know, it's actually gotten a lot of attention, and I've talked to a bunch of different podcasts. I've talked to a bunch of different, you know, people that have just made videos about my mom on TikTok or things like that too. Like I've gotten these bracelets that I made to like donate for her GoFundMe and stuff like that to try to raise money, you know, for if we need the money for billboards or if we need the money for a private investigation, whatever we need the money for, like that's what I'm trying to raise money for. There's been a bunch of people that have donated to it and wear their bracelets, and they tell me that they're wearing their bracelets and stuff, you know, in honor of my mom and things like that. So I don't know. I've been trying to do different little things to try and come up with money for her and stuff like that.
I feel a reward in this case is what is needed. Doesn't have to be a big reward. A reward is needed, and the reward needs to be advertised where she went missing, because that seems like where it happened. There needs to be a billboard assigned in Alabama right where it happened. And it's cold case, but 11 years is not that long. There should be a billboard with a picture. It could be up for extended amount of time. The main thing is to get it up, draw attention. Then there should be some type of a GoFundMe reward. Doesn't even have to be a big reward, just a reward. And it needs to be brought attention back. And I'm assuming the Lincoln County investigators have it as an open case, but this billboard and the reward can help to locate the body. And it, even if that could give closure and some answers, that can be done. And it has been done in other cases. So something like that is necessary. And that investigation, which would be the billboard and the reward, can still happen while the investigators follow their leads. And if a lead comes in about the actual crime, then it needs to be brought to the Lincoln County investigators, and then they can investigate it. But if a lead comes in to locate the body, then that needs to be done also. Something needs to be done. It's been 11 years. It's a cold case. And it's not so cold where everyone has passed away. I know two people have passed away, but it seems like there are other people in the town that know something happened, because it seemed like the missing happened right at that location.
Okay, so what do you do in that situation, John? If you think that, or it sounds like you're pretty confident just based on the location that somebody definitely knows what happened, saw what happened. When do you decide, like, here's what I'm going to do as far as going to interview people down there, like getting boots on the ground?
This is where it gets tricky. And, you know, I spent most of my career in law enforcement. I've only been a private eye for a few years. I personally don't investigate cases that I feel are an active investigation. There are private eyes out there that do that. I personally don't, and I don't take those cases. But if I speak to the law enforcement and they give me the green light to move forward, then I will do it. But this is not one of those cases, because we didn't speak. There are private eyes that will take that case. It's a 50-50 on what should be done on that, but that's for someone in that state to decide.
What's the area like where Janice went missing?
It's a lot of woods are out there. It's like the Talladega National Forest. And then we have like Mount Cheehaw out there, where there's this big mountain area. It's really a beautiful area out there, but it's really woodsy. There's rivers that a lot of people go fishing and swimming and partying out there. I don't know. It's a nice area, a really nice area. There's a lot of things to do out there if you like to be outside, I guess.
When I spoke with Tracy on this and I viewed the podcast, I contacted the Knoxville ME, and even though that wasn't the body, I learned a lot of information that they have colleagues in Colorado who have it's called the ANDE system, A-N-D-E, and it's a rapid DNA mobilization, which means that they'll take the DNA from the family, and then they'll send the DNA kit, which is a small machine from they described it, directly to the ME to test it to a Jane Doe. And something like this can be done in this case or another case. So, if anything, I've learned a lot that I will use information I've learned from this on my future cases. And some other bodies can be, you know, missings can be located through this. And they, I believe they're active in 19 states right now. And that is the future of missing persons investigations, that DNA aspect where the rapid mobilization, because these family members should not wait a long period of time to get the DNA results. It's hard enough for the way Tracy had to give that DNA, and being that Jane Doe looked so close, you know, I don't know how long she waited, but they say it's rapid. So in the future, rapid DNA is the future of these cases.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that, because it just feels like it is an obvious solution, or an obvious close to solution as it gets. You have someone who is a family member. They have the DNA, you know, they can do the sample against the sample from the Doe. And I feel like it's just so obvious. And I feel like we're really behind on it. I feel like we're super behind on making this happen and just bumping these disappearances, these stories, bumping them up the priority list, getting, you know, start checking them off. I know it feels like it's overwhelming because we hear the stats all the time about how many are unidentified and how many just aren't even registered in any system. So it's just this backlog, and I get it that they're going to have to do some legwork to catch things up to a point where it's manageable, but this is just me ranting. I just think, like, you can get a lot of volunteers to do this too. You can get a lot of retired physicians, doctors, anybody in the medical industry. You can have them volunteer to do that 5 hours a week, 10 hours a week, if there was really an effort put forward. But that's honestly me just on a 9:30 p.m. soapbox. So.
Well, you're correct exactly on what you said, but there is funding involved in that. And I'm sure there's red tape also. But like I said before, this is the future. And I believe in our lifetime, this will be streamlined. I believe that they will look back on it like fingerprints and look back, wow, how long I had to wait for the results to come back. Now it comes back automatic. Or a computer check. I believe that DNA and unidentifieds, it will be much more streamlined in the future.
Yeah, I hope so. I like your confidence on that.
I believe it's technology, and that's one of the things that our technology will progress with. There is funding involved, which is out of my wheelhouse, but there is funding also involved in that. And you still deal with state to state, which is common. It's not like NCIS or any of those TV shows. And state to state, things people do differently.
Right, right. Speaking of state to state, I'd like to go back to the geography question, Tracy. Are you living anywhere close to where your mom disappeared, or your...
No, I moved to Washington State.
You moved to Washington State. Okay.
Yeah.
And how long were you in that area before?
Well, before my mama went missing, I was in Texas with my ex-husband. He was in the Army and we were stationed out there.
Okay. So you actually never lived in Alabama?
No, I did. Growing up, I lived in Alabama. I moved away from Alabama when I was like 19. So we moved around a lot. Sorry, it's confusing.
No. It's all good. I guess I always have a really awkward roundabout way to ask a simple question, which is how often do you go to Alabama to visit friends or look at the, you know, the scene of the disappearance or anything like that?
I did, you know, a few times back when I lived back in Alabama. I'd drive up there and try to see if I could see anything that made sense, or maybe if I had some sort of gut feeling about something or somewhere. I don't know. I would just go to the places that we would go to when we were younger and everything, and just sit there and think about everything, I guess.
And what do you think happened to your mom?
I think there was foul play involved, and I think that it was someone that she knew. I don't know. I feel like maybe it could have been drug related, or, you know, something in that area. I don't know, maybe she overdosed and they didn't know what to do, or maybe they did it on purpose, or I don't know. I just feel maybe there were drugs involved. I mean, that's my only guess, I guess.
So where do you go from here? You know, it doesn't feel like there's a lot for you to work off of.
No, I don't know. I'm just sitting here waiting to hear back from the Central Alabama Crime Stoppers. I've spoken with them, and they said that they're going to offer up 220 different forms of media for my mom to get her information out there, but they were waiting to hear back from the investigator. but they haven't heard back from the investigator to get my mom's information. But I sent them the missing person paper poster that I've made for my mama and everything like that. So they said hopefully that might be enough information that they need to make everything for her. So that way they can do, you know, social media, they can do news outlets, they can do billboards and bulletin boards, you know, everything like that. But I asked them what was up with that, and they said they're waiting for an investigator. So I don't know how long that could take.
Is that the official investigation they're waiting on?
Yeah. Yeah. And they said that once they're able to do that, they would be offering a $5,000 reward.
Great.
For it too. Yeah, which is incredible. And that's awesome. So I'm really hoping that this goes through, or there's something that I can do to make it happen. I don't know. I just feel like I'm sitting here, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to do. I try to be as proactive about it as I can. And now I'm like, I feel kind of stuck.
Yeah, totally. Because at any time, like an hour goes by and you're not doing something, you feel like you should be doing something, but you don't have, I'm guessing you don't have training in law enforcement. Right. So at some point, like, it just, what you know to do just isn't there, you know? And I feel like it's good to have a relationship with Private Investigations for the Missing and John, so that maybe you could have some guidance or know that there's some independent organization that is putting some pieces together for you. Do you have any call to action for people who follow you on social, on TikTok? Like, what can the people do for you?
I made a petition. I don't know if it's even worth having, but I made a petition trying to get people to sign it, you know, so someone will be able to maybe take her case, or, you know, maybe get eyes out, you know, on her case, that maybe could, I don't know, do something more. Maybe something more could be done, I guess. It's just, I don't know. I don't know what to do, honestly.
More can be done. Like I said, it's a cold case, but it's not an ancient case. More could be done.
Is there any risk in offering a reward that you're going to get some? Because I know that that's a thing. Like, there's a big risk offering reward because you might get some people who are just in it and giving false information, and then you have to take the time to sort through that. What's the thought process behind this not being a risk?
For me, I know there is a risk for sure, but I feel like if I don't jump out there and try to take that risk, then there's also not going to be any type of movement, you know? Like, you have to look beyond that, and, you know, all that stuff is temporary, you know? All that stuff doesn't matter. What matters is finding out the truth, finding out where she is, finding out what happened, you know? Those are the things that matter, and to me, that matters more than all of this other stuff that possibly could happen, might happen, you know?
If you don't mind me asking, Tracy, what is it that you do outside of this?
Well, I have my own, like, small business where I make tumblers and cups and t-shirts and stuff like that. And I do that kind of stuff where I make things and sell art and stuff.
Is that some of your work behind you?
Yeah, this dream catcher.
Oh, and it's a crescent moon. That's awesome.
Thank you. Would you believe it? I made everything from the Dollar Tree.
Nice.
It's a hula hoop and coffee filters.
Oh, it's that big?
Yeah, it's big.
Wow, very cool.
Oh, so the moon is coffee filters?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Wow. Very creative.
And do you have an online store?
Yeah, I have an Etsy store. I've been trying to set up Shopify, but it's driving me crazy.
Don't even get us started on merch.
I can't.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. Well, tell us a little bit about your mom personally. What was she like?
She was really funny. She had a really good personality. She always made people laugh. I think that was something that she always liked to do, was just try to make people happy. And I think that through her trying to make everybody happy, she kind of lost sense of her happiness and started dealing with the wrong kind of people. But, you know, I think that was her biggest downfall. You know, I think that I see now as her as a person that really just wanted to help people, or I feel like she dealt with a lot of mental issues too. And I see now, you know, that she was hurting so much and she didn't know how to get help, you know, so she resorted to, you know, taking drugs or to find something that numbed the pain for just a little bit longer, you know. And I don't know. She did martial arts, and she was really good at martial arts. And she would do like karate competitions and stuff like that. And she would do really good. And I wish that maybe she would have stayed doing that, you know, focused all her energy and talent on that rather than getting so absorbed in a lifestyle that just destroyed her.
Yeah, that is really too bad. It's surprising. I think it's important for people to hear this, but, you know, it's surprising to hear somebody with such a juxtaposition, I guess, of a lifestyle where she was really good at martial arts, which takes discipline. But then I really liked what you said about, and it, I liked it in the way that you articulated it, that in her attempt to make people happy, she kind of lost herself in that. Because it really like put a spotlight on, I think, probably the surroundings that she was in. And it, had she been maybe in a different area with better circle of friends or better people around her, it would have been a different situation and a different, obviously it would have been a different end result or a different result. But that really does speak to like the type of environment that she was in, that people would take from her so much that they wouldn't even see that she was losing herself, only that she was there for their own purposes.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's sad.
It really is. And yeah, really, again, when we started this and you gave the honest answer about how you felt, people have to hear this part too, because again, it really humanizes the individual. And you know, like there are people out there who probably see their mother or father or sister or somebody in a similar situation and seeing them being lost to these, you know, other individuals and environments that aren't conducive to a healthy lifestyle. And if they hear you saying these things, it's important for them to recognize that, hey, you know, maybe my mom is going through what I suspected.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I don't know, like when I was younger, I used to get so mad thinking about my mom did drugs and she did all this and this and this. But as I've gotten older, I've tried to open my mind more about everything. And, you know, I want to be open and receptive toward everybody and everybody's feelings, you know. And now I see it as, you know, she was really hurting a lot. She was, you know, and she didn't know what to do, you know, and she had twin little girls, like, you know, and I don't know. I just try to look at it as that point, you know, as, and I feel like I wish everybody would look at people that way, no matter what they do or what they struggle with or anything. I think it's a really sad world where people, you know, negate people's emotional well-being or their life worth or anything like that. It's crazy.
Was your mom tough? Like, could she handle herself?
Yeah, she was. She was a scrapper too, so that probably never helped the situation. Mm-hmm. She popped off at the mouth a lot too. She was feisty. I guess you could call her feisty.
And how long did she do the martial arts for?
I know for sure probably like 5 years, but I don't know if she continued doing it after we left or anything like that. But I think honestly at that point, I think she was so hard on with drugs and everything that she wasn't into anything.
And on the Doe Network, her profile lists some distinguishing marks and features, and it says that she has multiple lung surgeries and scars on her back. What were the multiple lung surgeries and what were the scars? I mean, were the scars from the lung surgery?
Yeah, the scars were from the lung surgeries that she had. I don't know. Her lungs, I remember when I was little, her lungs just collapsed. They kept collapsing, and then they had to remove like part of a lobe and then the other part of a lobe of a lung, and she didn't have that many, like, much left of lung capacity at all.
Was she given pain meds?
Oh, probably. It was, yeah, I'm sure, probably. I was really little when that happened, but I remember having to take care of her and like take care of her wounds and everything like that, and I just remember being so horrified because they were so huge and I can't imagine.
She's young too.
Yeah, she was pretty young. Yeah. I don't know what happened. I don't know. Maybe if she just smoked so much that it caused her lungs to collapse or I don't know.
Yeah, it might have been a condition she had prior to, or just a condition she had, but I couldn't imagine how much you'd have to smoke for your lungs to collapse that quickly.
Yeah, I know. I can't. I mean, I know she used to smoke, but I don't remember her smoking like a train.
Right. Yeah. And she was 49 when she disappeared?
Yeah.
I was so young.
Yeah, for sure. I used to think 35 was really old, and now I'm about to be 35, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, you know, 49 is young, you know? I used to think that would have been so old, you know, when I was younger, but now I look at it, I'm just like, it's so young, and, you know, like, how does anybody, like, it just blows my mind how people can just disappear or, you know, vanish or something like that without any kind of trace or anything.
Yeah, and it's crazy because what we had said previous to this is that she was in a public place, and it's not like she was a toddler or an adolescent who didn't have the amount of defenses that your mom could have put up to save herself. So something I just feel like there's probably a few people who know exactly what happened. They just, you know, they haven't said anything so far. So why say it now? Because they've gotten away with it so far.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I have some theories about what I think might have happened, but I don't know. Like, it may just be my assumptions or my imagination or something. I don't know. But there's a few things that I feel like may have happened to her and stuff.
Did you share those thoughts with John?
Yeah, we've spoken about some of the things that I think may have happened.
And what do you think, John?
Well, it's more important that she speaks what she suspects and her gut feelings with the investigators who can go out there and do those interviews in the state and who have the resources to do that. They hopefully, I don't know their investigation, hopefully they've already done what she feels needs to be done. And her assumptions are, as an investigator, I would do. So I'm assuming they did it. We never know. But if she talks to them directly and gets an answer from them, then she'll know if it was done. And these angles of this investigation were looked at. You know, two people are deceased, so those two angles are finished. Somebody needs to speak. Could be a person who witnessed something a long time ago. You know, somebody needs to speak, even a little part of that investigation, and they need to contact the local investigators for that.
Did you say that you encouraged Tracy to tell law enforcement her theories on this because you felt like they were in line with what the reality could really be? Is that what you meant?
Well, from listening to the podcast, the way she described her mother and how she went missing, and, you know, an individual reports her 2 weeks later, and two individuals just reporting someone 2 weeks later needs to be looked at. Why was it done that way? That's important. Why would somebody wait 2 weeks to report somebody missing that they live with? So these are angles that need to be looked at. I'm sure they were looked at back in 2011, but you know, it is cold case now, and cold cases are hard to solve. They really are. They're all cold cases that are solved, but sometimes it's not the results people want. They all solve down the line. And this could be an example of one of those that gets, you know, solved. They take time. Not every cold case gets solved, but enough do where there are people out there looking into them like we're doing at this moment. So, you know, these family members need to be helped with these situations. They can't be forgotten. You know, years ago, a cold case was a cold case. It sat in a corner on a dusty file. Now we have social media and we have pictures that stay forever and, you know, interviews that stay forever. And things don't get lost anymore. And 2011 is not ancient history.
And I think this is a pretty clear question, or it'll have a clear answer, Tracy. What'll it mean? So I guess I'll make it into two questions. What'll it mean for you if any resolution does come of this? And if there is resolution, would you, because you've done such a great job advocating for your mom, would you want to parlay that into advocating for other family members or other people with missing family members?
That's what I feel like I'm meant to do, is to advocate for my mom. But if I can advocate for anybody else, you know, even if I can just give somebody a little bit of advice on, you know, like, who should you call or what should you do? You know, even if it's something small like that and I can help in any way, like, I'm more than happy to do that. Like, and yeah, if there was any way that I could work with people to help with anything, like, I would love to do that too, because I feel like this is something that I really like am passionate about. And, you know, if I can bring justice to my mom, then like, I know that maybe I would feel confident enough to feel like I could help do it for somebody else too. Maybe even if it's just me talking about them on TikTok or something like that, you know, I mean, But yeah, if there was anything, I would do anything, honestly, to try and help anybody.
Well, private investigations for the missing, we are always looking for researchers to help with missing person cases. So let us know if you're interested in that, because we would find those services very valuable.
Yeah, no, for sure. I can do that.
Great. We'll talk offline about it.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say here tonight about the case or anything?
I just don't want someone to hear my story and automatically hear that I was taken from my mom and I was put in foster care and I was adopted and she struggled with this and she struggled that. I don't want anybody to look at that and automatically put her into a box and say she doesn't deserve to be found or she did this. I get questioned all the time. Your mom may have been so horrible to you when you were a child. Why do you even care? Why are you even looking for her? And all I can tell anybody is that she's my mama. And if that was me, I would hope that somebody would be looking for me, especially my kids. You know, like at the end of the day, she's still my mama. Like, and that's just the only thing I can say.
That's a great answer and way to be very diplomatic in your response to people who ask you that, because that shows some pretty significant patience.
I try.
I bet you do. I mean, like, what kind of person would say that? You know what I mean? Like, what is... Okay, I'm going to mute myself.
Do you hear the craziest stuff? I could probably write a book about the stuff that I've heard.
You have to ignore those people. They're out there, and unfortunately, people attach themselves to these things, and they shouldn't be attaching themselves to these things, but they do. But if they're ignored, they'll go away. For every person who has a comment to what Tracy said, there are many others who do not feel that way. And maybe they don't get their voice out there, but there are a lot of people, and there are a lot of retired law enforcement like myself who feel anybody who goes missing needs to be investigated no matter what their circumstances were. Because very, and I've said this on other podcasts, very few of the missings have a clean slate and they just disappear out of thin air. People have a past, and unfortunately, sometimes their past puts them in the path of going missing. But still, that needs to be investigated because these missings are a crime. Unless it's a suicide, that missing is a crime and it needs to be investigated. Results need to come, or at least attempted. Now, that's why I help others out with this, what I'm doing now, is because it seemed that Tracy didn't get much help over time. It's not fair to her that people kind of ignored this over the years. And just helping her on this case, I think, is a step in the right direction.
And thank you. I really appreciate it, honestly. Like, everybody that's speaking to me or listening or anything, I really appreciate everybody.